And welcome to the Link 2013 Ignite Link Updates and Programs, for where we're going to be talking today in this course about identifying your critical support dependencies for Link Server.
That's a mouthful.
It is. So what it is really the Link Support Architecture team has spent about the last 2 years working with customers and partners to identify the critical support needs that really get you to a successful Link implementation. And our experience has shown that designing a system for Link or designing a Link support system as you're deploying Link really contributes to the success factors of getting your Link up and running.
Link is not a simple application. It definitely has a lot of dependencies and a lot of things to make sure that are running correctly, and any one of those things can hamper the whole user experience. So knowing what's involved matters, right?
Most definitely. So I'm Aaron Steele. I'm joined today by Brian Ricks.
Hi, everyone.
I've been a senior consultant with Microsoft for about the past 3 years. I've been focused on Link and specifically voice during that time. I've been in computers and general Microsoft infrastructure technologies for about the past 18 years. I live in Chicago with my wife and two kids.
Nice. And I am Brian Ricks. I own and operate Brightcom Computers as an independent consultant. I am focusing on unified communications architecture of late. That's anywhere from Exchange and Active Directory and all the dependencies that go along with Microsoft Link to make this stuff work. I am certified Microsoft Solutions Master in communications. I'm an MVP with Microsoft Link since 2006, but been using the product since LCS 2003 and deploying. And overall, 20 years of just IT blah blah stuff. And in those 20 years, since 2009, I have been independent.
Great. So for this course, the expectations and our target audience really is those IT and telecommunications professionals who design, plan, deploy, and maintain, most importantly, solutions for unified communications. We're looking for people who are experienced and are looking to better understand what's new with Link Server and the support of Link Server since 2013. We've got some additional courses here if you want to become familiar with Link Server 2013. And then some exams that you can take to work towards your MCSE in communications. For this course, what we'll be talking about, as we said, is the critical support dependencies for Link. We'll really be talking about what it takes to support unified communications, how to understand and what it takes to understand your support requirements, what it takes to understand a UC environment and how complex those can be. We'll talk about developing a support structure map, and we'll talk about timing the support discussion. When we talk about supporting unified communications, we really talk about a little bit about this idea that there's some new dynamics, dependencies, and challenges in this. We have the challenge landscape of, or the changing landscape of a voice solution. We have the convergence of telecom and IT. It's been the case in most companies that your telecom group was highly separated from your IT group standardly. We're moving from a standard PBX to a software-based or a software-based application, and very possibly we're moving from just pure voice over IP into a full unified communications platform.
Right. So, and in those cases where your telecom group was separate, even if it was a voice over IP solution that you had deployed, 9 out of 10 times they were still, well, maybe considered part of IT. They weren't part of IT. They were the telecom people.
Yeah, they managed those phones, and now it's going to be the case where they have to interact with the Active Directory. Right. So supporting a design really is part of the solution. You can't treat the two as separate. You have to understand and plan for the support dependencies of Link during your design of Link. You can't just plan the infrastructure without planning how you'll support the infrastructure ongoing. If you walk away from your customer or walk away from your own deployment without completing your support plan, it's not complete. When we get to understanding the requirements, this is about figuring out what it takes to support them. We're talking about non-functional requirements of the Link service. This isn't so much, is Link up 99% of the time? It's about some of those non-functional requirements. What are your key business requirements about this? What is the scope of the service? What service level agreements or service level targets do you have? Then you get into a bit of what system requirements exist and how you monitor and support and gauge these things. But again, it's criteria that judge the operation of the system, not so much criteria that judge the performance of the system, for, right. per se.
And not the literalness of the system. Is it up? What's it, to your point? Are we getting 3, 4, 5 nines? Can we draw reports to see that things are happening? No, we want to look at, are we getting the KPI information that we're looking for in order to make other business decisions? And where are these back driving factors that are non-functional, not the system, but are we getting better overall perception of calls? Are we more productive? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. When we're talking about developing this, we have to really engage the right people. We have to engage at the organizational level with executives. Really, it is the case that you need an executive sponsor or at least a business unit lead when you're developing this support structure. Your core team really is everything from the architects of the environment to network services managers and telecom managers. It's help desk people and service desk people, and it involves users from your business users, departmental users, and or very possibly power users who are really understand how the business operates and how the business uses this structure.
And ideally, those user community is IT friendly and they like you. And they will tell you when something is not quite right or not working the way the business needs it to work without proliferating that information to the rest of the world.
Sure.
We want people on your team that are on your team. So make sure you, to the title, engage the right people. It's not only the groups of people, but the people that will be members of this team.
And give you valuable feedback.
Give you value.
Yeah, we want valuable feedback from these users, not just complaining and moaning.
Yeah.
So you really need to consider your support challenges when you're designing these requirements. It's, do you have long issue resolution times? Are you trying to solve a business disruption? Are you trying to solve cost inefficiencies? Are you trying to solve complex escalation paths in these support sort of structures? Are you trying to solve a lack of accountability that's in your environment? And they really...
And around we go.
and they really sort of get back to, as a key takeaway, you need to help your business or your customers that you're working with understand and then capture the support requirements they have for the Link solution.
Right, and there's two types of communities that we'll be looking at. There's the support challenges that exist for the end user. That's highly important. But there's also the support challenges for the IT group, because these long resolution times and complex solutions, if they don't have a way to get these done, the product fails. If the clients are not getting what they need from the deployment of the product and it's not meeting expectations or expectations were incorrectly set, then the product's going to fail. There's a lot of reasons from an external sourcing or outside impact that can change the perception of the product deployment as being successful or not successful. And so keeping your hands around this and getting ahead of this before the end of the project is highly encouraged.
Yep. We move into understanding the environment. Now that we understand what our customers or what our business expects out of the solution, we have to try and understand what the environment that solution operates in.
Sometimes we start with Visio.
We start with a Visio of Link. And when you start to look at this, we've got, a large number of moving parts in this. We've got software, we've got network, we've got hardware, we've got devices, we've got PBXs, we've got a huge mix of the pieces and parts that make a Link solution. It's everything from your directory to your PBX to your wiring to your closets to your switches, and you really do have to understand how these pieces fit and how they interoperate.
Yeah, and one of the uniquenesses with Link, unlike other Microsoft products and from an IT pro perspective, is Link reaches much deeper than any other Microsoft product into services and pieces that were not necessarily your concern prior to this. It was always a server-centric solution. Now we're saying, hey, you have physical phones on your desk. They require PoE. That means that switch has to be working, and the firmware on the switch matters, and how the switch is configured in order to get us on the VLAN that we want, and all of these new things that were never part of our problem, fax machines and punch-down blocks, and it can be overwhelming because there is so much more today with a Link solution than there has been traditionally in a Microsoft solution.
Most definitely. What you'll note in this slide, though, is the green pieces of content are what we commonly think of when we're talking about understanding a link solution. But the truth is, to develop a support structure for all of your environment, you have to know about all these things, which is why we involve all those other people when we're developing this support structure.
And this is not necessarily all-inclusive, so don't...
It's not authoritative.
This is one way to start your look, but maybe you have more Active Directory, maybe the sites, maybe it's regionally based, maybe however it needs to be drawn out, but you having a Visio to start your troubleshooting process is a great way to start this understanding the environment process.
As part of this, there is a service from Microsoft and available to the Microsoft partners to deliver, which is what we call our risk assessment program, and we're now running it as a service, which is a cloud-based assessment through Microsoft Premier Support. It is a set of assessment tooling with an ongoing availability of multiple submissions and access through a secure online portal to collect that data and submit it. There are additional regular updates into that cloud-based portal to support updated best practice guidance for new features of the portal. The use of the Microsoft online portal and tools with an active Premier support contract for 1 year is part of this wrap as a service. There's when you're working with your Premier support organization, there's knowledge transfer of those issues that are found and advice towards fixing them. And a technical findings report will be issued as part of this initial engagement with that service.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, today this is a Microsoft offering via Premier. It is something that is being looked at to soon be an option that partners of some definition, what that may be, again, is yet to be defined, will have the opportunity to deliver the same service that Microsoft does today. But today it's a Microsoft offering.
Yeah. So, where are you today with this? The questions that you want to be asking your customer or yourself as an IT organization, they come down to really, what are the challenges about your voice system today? What do you like? What do your existing support escalation paths look like? What vendors and support contracts are already in place?
If any.
What SLAs and SLTs, so service level agreements versus service level targets, do those vendors and support contracts, be they internal or external, offer? What's the average resolution time you're experiencing with those different vendors? And what's the interoperability like with other systems and their support teams? So as we saw, Link is connected to so many other different pieces of your environment, pieces of your network, that as things break or as things get complex or as you're trying to solve problems with one piece of it, and when it interoperates with another piece of it, how do those relationships work? And when you need to open a support contract with your network vendor because your directory server is running slow, how does that channel get open in your organization?
Right, and a very common issue that we see is that the network, being either the physical network, the LAN that you're working on, and or WAN, or even the internet piece, is outsourced to a third party that has designed it, implemented it. Your support contracts with them will impact directly your ability to support Microsoft Link if, in fact, you're using the Edge server to get to the outside. So if something happens on the firewall and you are unable to reach somebody because they have a 48-hour guarantee to get back to you, there's a good chance that's not going to fly in a Link deployment, and something will have to be looked at.
Yeah, and it is the case that what you have to remember about this is you want to capture all the different pieces, moving parts, and service level agreements that could potentially impact the success and performance of your UC solution. From an escalation experience, you have to understand what the paths are for you to escalate with your hardware vendors, with your network vendors, with your software vendors, or with your device vendors for that matter. You have to understand who maintains the overall ownership of those UC issues. So as you discover or work through the support structure of a Link solution, can you escalate? And if you escalate, does that drop out to a different group within your organization? Maybe a vendor management group starts managing that relationship. You have to consider the interaction of those multiple components and vendors. So when you have to open an issue, if you're troubleshooting a network problem or troubleshooting a problem with a device, do you have to open a contract with or open a support ticket with the device vendor and the network vendor and Microsoft at the same time?
Yeah, and very potentially and very likely in a lot of these scenarios that we get into difficult things. And it's funny because remember, this goes all the way down to, do you have power to your system, and making sure that there's an escalation path for building maintenance if something goes wrong, or whomever owns the power source for you guys, or if it's a generator and who has the generator contracts to make things up, all the way to often forgotten, well, you know, my servers happen to be made by vendor X. That is a support number that needs to be kept on track, and part of if the server's not running, it doesn't matter that the application is running, because it won't be running because mm-hmm. the server's not running. I mean, it goes all the way down as far as this goes and can be very detailed and should be very detailed down to the minutia.
Most definitely. So the key takeaway from this about understanding the environment is you need to analyze your customer's existing and planned environment, or your own existing and your planned environment, to understand how it is supported.
Right, not just link itself end to end.
So we move into developing that support structure map. This is where we're really going to talk about taking that information we've gathered in the past and turning that into how we get to having a support structure and a supported environment. We're going to take a structured approach to this, and we're going to start with effectively the Microsoft Operations Framework. We're going to leverage the plan phase in this to do a service mapping. We're going to work with business and IT to align their goals. We're going to work to gauge the reliability targets that we have. We're going to work through the policy and financial management aspects of that to understand it may be the case that we have a support or escalation path with a vendor that is dictated with that vendor because of the costs of a different level of support with that vendor. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand the financial pieces of it as well. Part of this is working through the operational phase, right? This is, in that operational phase, we have to continue that problem management and problem administration. You'll notice in that delivery phase, we skip that. That's the part that you guys are really comfortable with already. It's how you deploy Link, how you deliver the product. So it's really about pulling these two other pieces into that overall framework that we have of the Microsoft Operations Framework. When we look at the overview of what a service mapping is, it contains the what of a service, the different components and relationships for that service, for managing the how of that service. It contains the delivery and controls to ensure expected availability, capacity, security, and manageability. It does not address the relationships, though, of the teams that support these service components.
So it's abstracted, right? We're just looking at it from a operations perspective. What is it we're trying to kind of keep up, and how are we going to kind of keep those services up? So,
yep. So an overview of the support structure mapping is that it's an evolution of the Microsoft Operations Framework service mapping. It considers the relationships between infrastructure components and support. It defines a reference set of common Link infrastructure components. It defines their dependencies. It defines support paths and response times. And it defines the escalation paths that we have for that structure. So for instance, if we have the pool that depends on DNS, that depends on the support and help desk, which has a 4-hour SLA, and the messaging team has a 4-hour escalation, and the network team has a, they don't have an SLA. We have just identified this gap in this support structure such that we can be sure that there's no way for us to support our pool with a 4-hour SLA to our end users because the network team has no SLA.
Right. There's no guarantee that if it is a networking issue, it's going to be fixed in this organization, which is a little odd, but they have none in this example. And so You're only as strong as your weakest link, right? And it's cumulative as well. So sometimes when you're thinking about this, the SLA for the help desk may be 4 hours, but it's 4 hours till potentially they're handing it off and they're getting somebody else involved.
Sure, it's 4 hours to look at the issue. It's not 4 hours to resolution.
Fix the problem, right? And so they could be working on this for 4, 5, 6 hours, give up, and then contact the messaging team, which have 4 hours to respond to that request to then start looking at the problem. And after they've exhausted their capabilities and determined it's a network problem with no SLA, it goes into la-la land.
And what you have to understand when you're developing this support structure map is simply understanding those relationships and making sure you convey those to the business.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way that it's done with the MOF framework, that we can take and think of it backwards. Think of it at the high level. That's the easy part. That's what you've just deployed or designed. And then start to just think, what is DNS? What does the pool require? It requires DNS. It requires a lot of things, but obviously in this tree, DNS. And then DNS can break off of every step, can say, well, what does DNS require to make it work? Well, it requires Active Directory. Well, what does Active Directory require to work? Well, it requires the servers, then again down to the power in the actual building itself. So you can start at the biggest component and just start breaking each component down more and more and more.
Most definitely. So the process for developing this support structure really gets down to capturing your support requirements, capturing the components of the link solution, as we've said, identifying those support functions and the SLAs that work with them, and then you map those functions to the components and the dependencies, which gets you to identify the gaps in your support structure that you have, which should push you towards remediating those gaps that you've identified. When we talk about a link solution components and dependencies, there's this massive list of things we have and we are part of the link solution or that link depends on. And the important piece to remember is simply and so on.
That's right. This is not exhaustive by any means.
Right. Link is huge and talks to so many things. A typical customer support team structure, though, breaks down into a set of who's, what roles, what technical skill set they have, and what their exposure to cases is. And this is something that we sort of see triage or call dispatch tier 1 through tier 4.
It can also be something we set up in a response group. So if tier 1 doesn't answer, it goes to tier 2, to 3, to 4. Yay. Of course, if linked down, maybe that wouldn't work. But anyway.
Yeah. So when we're talking about this, this is just sort of an example of what we see at a typical customer, is that the call dispatch people, they're the people who get the majority of calls, but in fact, they aren't expected to solve any of those calls. The tier 1 people are general technologists. They solve most customer issues, and they have a breadth of knowledge rather than a depth of knowledge in any one thing. We sort of expect that they'll solve 60% of the issues or get to see 60% of the issues rather than 100% of the issues.
Yeah, they're going to have that book of the standard SOPs, standard operating procedures, that they can
refer to and
get these answers done within. And they're looking for first call resolution. They want to get these calls out. So that's typically your tier 1's going to, as I said, 60% of your calls are just never going to go anywhere.
Yep. Yeah. Tier 2, however, is going to get 20% of those calls. And they're really technology specific and deep in a specific technology rather than broad across many technologies. Once you get into tier 3, we're working at design teams or architectural teams who solve critical infrastructure issues at an expert level, but really should only be seeing 5% of the issues. And of those, we expect only about a percentage of the issues to be escalated into vendors, be it Microsoft or third-party vendors, as product issue, code bugs, crit sits, etc.
Mm-hmm.
From a service level agreement perspective, you end up getting to developing a meaningful service level agreement.
I like the word meaningful.
Yeah,
if it's not realistic, then it doesn't matter that you have an SLA. If you can't beat it and meet it and beat it, then it doesn't matter.
Agreed. Right? But you, to develop that service level agreement, you effectively have to start with, is it down or is it degraded? What are our response times and what are our escalation times at each of those tiers and levels? It is good to know that at that fourth level, they have no escalation because they are the ultimate escalation.
There's nowhere to go. They have to solve it or it's unsolvable.
Mm-hmm. So, and you should look at how this works in terms of time to respond versus time to escalate, what makes sense for your environment.
And that goes back to what we were talking about, where it's great to set a time to escalate. So while they have a time to respond, their SLA, which is commonly what it's referred to in generic terms, while they may have 4 hours to get to you, after 4 hours or once they start the call, they have to escalate it if they can't get it figured out in X amount of time. Because you don't want to sit with them working something and it not getting escalated. You need to have a clear escalation path and clearly defined, which is what the meaningful part of this is all about.
Mm-hmm. This will work you into a gap analysis where you've started to identify those gaps in your support strategy or your escalation paths. It'll get you to a place where you identify which escalation paths break your overall SLA. It'll help you to understand which aspects of the link solution are at risk, how to most efficiently align those to your tasks that you have, and in general, it'll help you to identify over and underutilized teams.
Yeah, and when we get our gaps and we're considering how we're going to build these SLAs based off of what we think we want versus what the gap is, one of those gaps can be getting back to the meaningful and setting reasonable expectations. 3 nines is a common goal
sure.
people go for, right? And if you have 99.9% uptime, that's roughly somewhere around 9 hours a year that you can be down.
That's not very much time.
That's not a lot of time. And in our example, we had 4-hour response time. If we were down and we were waiting for a 4-hour response, almost half of our time for our entire year is already gone, and mm-hmm. they haven't even responded to our problem yet, let alone fix the problem. So set expectations accordingly, whether, not saying you lower your SLAs, but perhaps you change your response time requirements. You set expectations up front of what the system can do, because Link can deliver a high level,
it can be structured,
multi-nined
yep.
solution if in fact the infrastructure and the support team behind the infrastructure is set to do so.
Most definitely. When we move into the remediate step of developing this support structure, it really gets down to some basics of a remediation plan. It's developing that action plan to address your gaps, whether it's renegotiating your SLAs with your vendors or your internal support partners. You really should, though, convert those gaps into services opportunities. Develop new training. So if the issue is your second level people have too long of a support escalation time, maybe it's because they don't feel trained enough to deal with the issues often and commonly enough, so they need more time to research and look at the issue, and that's an opportunity for you to train those people. Maybe you can deal with reactive support services or proactive support services to increase your reliability of your system. So
yeah, and rather times and alerts and things of that nature as well, so that your SLA of response of knowing that there's a problem can be reduced to almost immediate.
Most definitely. And you can also take it from a reactive support into proactive support and digging into and investigating your system before it goes down.
Now, from a Link world, the perfect example is your certificates. They do expire. We alert as much as we can through the event viewers, and if things are watching that proactively, you can roll that SERP, and there will never be an outage. You won't even know
yep.
what happened. But if you're fighting to figure out what went wrong, and it's a certificate on either a Link server or a reverse proxy or something of that nature, again, you could have just eaten up 4 or 5 hours worth of effort just to figure out something that the system was trying to tell you was going to happen.
Yep. So when we look at the support structure mapping output, what we end up getting is a set of overall escalation targets and time to escalation or time to respond and what our desired availability comes to. We get a set of defined teams, what their time to respond is, and what their SLA or OLA is for that. And it maps through all these, and you end up getting a map of how the Link component maps to its subcomponent, maps to its dependency, and how those escalate through into the different tiers of your environment. And the support structure mapping output looks very similar to that Visio we had at the beginning of this, where we were understanding the network, but now we understand critical dependencies and critical places where we've got systems at risk because of some underlying problem in our support structure. From a timelines perspective, the timelines for doing this sort of support structure map are really determined by customer size and complexity, the solution size and complexity, the level of quality engagement with those customer teams or those teams at your business, customer operational maturity, so how operationally mature is your business to be able to handle these things, and what level of discovery automation you have. So if you have a system that's going to be able to dig into your network and into your environment at a high level rather than a deep level, you may have a bigger challenge to discover and inventory these things. The takeaway from this is really about using that MOF-based structure to develop this helps you document your support and escalation paths for all the components of a Link server environment, no matter how big they are.
Yeah, and really the approach is valuable for anybody that does this. So whether you're a partner, whether you're internal and you're attempting to do these things on your own, this is a valuable approach to figuring out what is it that we can offer? What is it set the expectations for the end user of the availability of the system.
Set them appropriately with the business and understand what they really mean.
Right.
In terms of timing the support discussion, what we're really talking about is getting the support right. Support is often an afterthought to a project at project implementation plans. And what we really want to do is introduce the support discussion at the right time. Support should be introduced into the project lifecycle rather than as an afterthought. And you want to address the dependencies of that in the solution architecture. Again, take that structured approach to developing that support map.
Yeah, interesting. Those that leave support to the very end often miss the opportunity of using the pilot group, which is what we're deploying this to first, to test out our escalation paths, to test out this process that we are putting into place. And in fact, end up being detrimental to themselves, because as things fail during a pilot, there's no way to resolve them quickly, and now the project has the potential to fail because there's no way to get the escalation of the service that you were looking for.
Most definitely. So we see this about introducing the support discussion in the development phase of that sales-like lifecycle or that project lifecycle. Mm-hmm. You really want to ensure that support costs are included in your solution, either sale or your internal cost estimation of the product. And you would want to include support requirements captured during project discovery into the overall solution requirements. The idea is your customers or your business should see a well-structured support solution as a positive outcome of your project. You don't want to look at this as an afterthought.
Right.
So in summary, supporting UC environments brings unique challenges. We really have to help customers and our own business understand and then capture their support requirements for a Link solution. We do need to analyze existing and planned environments to see how they're supported, and we have to use a structured approach to identify and document support escalation paths for all components of a Link server solution. We want to generate services opportunities out of this when we're dealing with these things. Customers should see a well-structured support solution as a positive outcome of any engagement, and your business should see a well-structured support discussion as a positive outcome of their deployment of Link. We want to deliver a great experience for our customers and our business. We have a couple of resources here for you about the Microsoft Operations Framework service mapping. We have a few Link certified support partners, and we have a link to the RAP as a service. And with that, we wanted to mention that the Link Conference 2014 is coming up in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 18th to the 20th of 2014.
That's right around the corner.
It is. And you can register now at linkconf.com. And I want to thank you so much for joining us for the Link 2013 Ignite Link updates and programs about service mapping.